Well, greetings everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the federal land banks right after this. You know, we Americans talk a lot about private business, and we use terms like private ownership and private property and private rights. But we also use terms like stocks, bonds, negotiable instruments, licenses, and permits in our pursuit of profit and gain in our business transactions. Well, listen to this. Did you know that stocks and negotiable instruments are the exact opposite to private ownership? That bonds are the exact opposite to private property? Public business licenses are the exact opposite to private rights, and permits are the exact opposite to private business? And why is it that we see small business being subjected to such a constant barrage of attacks by government at every level, from Washington to your hometown? And what can you and I do to protect our lives, our liberties, and our property from these incessant attacks by OSHA, the EPA, the State Tax Commission, Zoning and Planning, the IRS, and these swarms of government agents and agencies that are eating out our substance? Well, you know, there's a lot that we can do, and the first step is to inform ourselves as to the legal alternatives that we have between public business and private business. Now, if you'd like to learn more about this thing called private business, why don't you call and order our free General Law CD package, and let me tell you more about what it is that you're not supposed to know about this thing called private business. Remember, it's educational, it's entertaining, it's informative. Best of all, it's free. You can call and order one right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Click on the archives page, and you can download that free General Law CD package right there. Hey, we're talking about the Federal Land Bank, and I'm reviewing a book here called The Night Came to the Farms of the Great Plains. It's written by Raymond D. North. This guy North is a CPA. He's a tax preparer. And he stumbled upon, I don't know, he might have searched it out. Maybe he's smarter than I give him credit for, but he stumbled upon the secret to the federal land banks. In fact, he stumbled upon the secret to the secret societies that are bankrupting the farmers and indeed bankrupting America to merge it into the New World Order. So if you farmers out there are wondering, well, what's happening to us, and you're voting, you know, just right and left, you know, and we're just working our hearts out over here to help Barack Obama help the small farmers over here, well, dream on, because all of these presidents, all of these secretaries of agriculture, all of these programs that the Congress has been enacting for you over the past 80 years has been a trick. It's a ruse. It's an agenda, and then there's an ultimate outcome to it. The ultimate outcome was to drive all of the farmers off of the lands, to reduce all of land ownership in America, all the farmland ownership, into 200,000 units. That's the purpose behind this. And they have probably gotten about 90% of the way there. We're not down to 200,000 units yet, but that's where we're headed. All of you little farmers are going out. Well, you know, not every single one. Some of you will survive. But it's going to be more by accident, unless you are attuned to what the hell's going on around you so that you can take evasive action. I mean, there could be some farmers survive because they're working at it. But if you survive this, it's going to be an accident. And that's because the plan has been executed over the past 80 years, and it works perfectly. It is genius, absolute genius. And this guy North discovered it. He discovered it when he was working on 300 tax returns from farmers out here in Oklahoma, and he said they're taking the three-year depreciation allowance that Congress voted in, which makes all the sense in the world. I mean, anybody that's in his right mind would want to depreciate that combine out in 3 years rather than 10. So Congress enacted that. And then he discovered all these farmers that were taking this accelerated depreciation allowance were going bankrupt. And he said, well, why is that? And the answer was very clear, very plain. You see, when you go to the commercial bank to get a loan, they want to see your last 3 years tax return. And the bank looks at your last 3 years and they see your profit. And then they say, okay, well, then here's what we're going to loan you. But when you take the advanced depreciation allowance in 3 years instead of 10, it throws you into a minus. And when the banker sees you got a minus, he won't lend you any money. If he doesn't lend you any money, you can't put in a crop. If you can't put in a crop, you can't make any money. If you don't make any money, you can't pay your federal land bank, and you go bankrupt. And the federal land bank takes your land, sells it to John Hancock at ADM, Cargill, or somebody else, which is exactly what the plan is designed for. It's to bankrupt you. But we have to do it in such a way that it makes it look like we're helping you. And that's the genius behind the plan. They formulate these farm programs, and they tell you this is to help the little farmer. You believe it, and then you buy into the program, and if you buy into the program, they got you. And I've been explaining that to you. Now, I'm not the guy that's smart enough to figure this out. I wish I was. I wish I could come to you people and say, look at what I discovered. Look how smart little Georgie is. Now, I'm sorry to report to you, I'm as dumb as a box of rocks, but this guy Raymond North ain't dumb, and he figured this out. That's why I've graded this book. I review books, and I read a lot. And I got to tell you, this is a 1 in 100. 1 in 100. While it's true there's thousands of books out there on farming and parity and farm programs and blah, 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 this is the only time I've ever read a book that ever put his finger on the heart of the problem and said, hey, here's the problem, and here's the way this is working. It's Congress, the Federal Land Bank, and the Department of Agriculture working together. Now, he hasn't put together the fourth rung to the ladder, and that is the secret societies are directing this from the top, and it filters down from the secret societies down to the Department of Agriculture, the President, the Congress, and down to the Federal Land Bank, and so on. And his take on it is that it's ignorance on the part of our politicians and our planners, and it's foolishness and bad policy, and it's the Republicans that are doing this, what we need is higher parity. Okay. And that's the mantra that I've been listening to all my life. And if it was ignorance, foolishness, bad policy, Democrats or Republicans, parity, high, lower, in the middle, communist, socialist, or capitalist, once in a while, just by the law of averages, it would work out in our favor. Once in a while. Like standing at the crap table. You know, once in a while, you got to throw a 7 or 11. Once in a while, you got to make a point. Boys and girls, when you throw the dice and you never make a 7, 11, and never make a point, the fix is in. And that's what I'm telling you here, the fix is in. He discovered the fix. He discovered. Hey, and it's not just in chapter 4. He's got another chapter in here that deals with this FMHA, chapter 5. He's got another chapter 3 over here about the Federal Reserve. He's got another chapter in here about Reaganomics. Boys and girls, if it wasn't for a certified public accountant, I mean a guy that can count, a guy that understands numbers, budgets, and taxes, and analysis, we couldn't figure this out. Little guys like us down here at the bottom of the pile, we have to take our tax returns in to the paid professionals to have them work out our numbers. And that's all of that paperwork, that's not an accident. That's done directly so that we can't understand what the hell's been done to us. The reason that this is so complex is so that we can't understand it. And the paid professionals are usually in on the scam. This guy picks up on the scam and then tells you, here's how it works. And I'm telling you, in all the years that I've been doing this, I think this is the single most exciting series of programs I've ever done. I was so excited on the second program, I went overtime. Now, I wanted to share that with you because the book is called Night Came to the Farms of the Great Plains. Nothing about the book stands out. There just isn't anything here that would make you say, my God, if this guy is telling the truth, we're all doomed. The guy's name is Raymond North. Now, it comes from the publisher here, the guys that are promoting it here. It's called Acres USA. Now, Acres puts out a monthly publication, and it's the only one of its kind. The Acres publication is like a 1 in 100 read of and by itself, because there's all kinds of farm papers out there, but there's only one Acres. I've never seen anything like it. Nobody else publishes anything like it. Maybe the closest thing you could get is Rodale, and I don't think Rodale puts out a monthly publication. If they do, I haven't seen it. This is designed for farmers, commercial farmers, organic commercial farmers. And if you want to subscribe to Acres USA, why don't you call them 1-800-355-5313. I recommend them at the top of the list. Top of the list. And of the number of publications that come in here across my desk, there's four or five that are right up at the top. And you hear me recommend The International Forecaster by Bob Chapman, The Privateer, remember, from Australia, The Money Changer, and Acres USA. Now, I get a lot of publications in here, and they're good, and I'm not running anybody down. But, you know, my experience says to me, hey, this guy's got something to say, and he has it to say more often than Acres. Is up one of those. That number, again, for Acres is 1-800-355-5313. And remember this book now. It's Night Came to the Farms of the Great Plains. And the guy's name is Raymond North, and you get it from Acres. Just call Acres and tell them, hey, I want that book. All right, I'm not going to get into the FMHA thingy right now. If I have time, I'll touch on it, but I kind of doubt that I'm going to have time. So make sure you get the book so that you can understand. Here's what they're doing to you, and here's the way they're doing it. Now, the insurance companies back in the early 1970s fled the scene because they were not about to lend money on farms bearing artificially inflated price tags. A farmer from Garber, Oklahoma, told me that his grandfather, father and himself, had borrowed money from life insurance companies for more than 60 years. All of a sudden, in the early 1970s, the insurance companies refused to give him a loan, and he never really knew why. They simply decided not to lend to farmers anymore. And it happened all over the Great Plains, and it all happened at the same time. So I asked a vice president of one of the larger insurance companies why his company had left the field, and he said there was a move on by the federal government to take over the long-term federal credit system, and the feds wanted the insurance men out. They'll bid up their loans to farmers, and we're not going to get involved in that. When this boom that their financing goes bust, we won't be there holding the bag. Now, let me pause right here and show you who's going to be left holding the bag. It's the farmers. See, the insurance companies now, they took a look at this and said, no, wait a minute. You got a $50,000 farm out here, and this guy is going to pay $100,000 for it. Why is he going to pay $100,000? Well, because he's getting $12 a bushel for soybeans, or he's getting $4, $5, $6. You know, they bid the price of... See, Congress sets the price of these commodities. And Congress is buying this and setting these prices because they have an unlimited source of funds called the taxpayers. That's why your national debt's $13 trillion. They've spent all of us Americans into bankruptcy financing this destruction of the economy. We Americans are sitting here voting for Republicans and Democrats who are owned by the secret societies, who are bought and paid for by campaign contributions, which is pure bribery. And we're financing our own destruction in the process. Now, you can sit there and you can say, I don't believe it. I'm telling you, this is pure genius. It's pure genius because not only have they done it, they got away with it, and you don't even know it yet. And you're not going to find out until you read the answer here in the book. But the insurance industry knew this in the early 1970s. They took a look at this and they said, hey, wait a minute, we got to back out of this. Now, insurance companies don't have any particular interest in getting out here and warning anybody or buying full-page ads in USA Today, say, hey, watch out for the new farm bill over here. It's designed to aid ADM and to kill wheat farmers. They might know that, and if you ask them, they'd probably tell you that over coffee down at the coffee clutch, but they're not going to go out and spend a lot of money. No, the people that are spending the money trying to propagandize you, it's the Congress, it's the president, it's the salesman from the land bank coming out to the auction. Well, most of these insurance company loans have been paid down, and the small remaining balances are very well secured because they never kited up the sales price on a parcel of land to start with. Their customers remained loyal to them, and they've also remained solvent. It's important to remember that Congress never voted to socialize the farm credit system. It was the slick operators in the federal land banks who decided to take the matter into their own hands. So with their faked appraisals and their ability to attract huge sums of money to the system by way of tax exemptions, created by Congress, of course, the land banks could afford to outbid the insurance companies. So they cornered the market on long-term farm credit. The whole sorry mess makes a good case for never granting a federal agency that much independence or that much power. The likelihood that it will veer sharply away from general government policy is simply too great. Had the federal land bank system been audited and supervised by the Secretary of Agriculture, events probably wouldn't have spun so far out of control, but we'll never know now. Now, there is further tragedy in the way crucial lessons of history were ignored. During the New Deal, Frances Perkins was Secretary of Labor, and she repeatedly warned against creating an independent government agency. And she said that every agency must answer to someone who answers to the American people. She taught that responsibility is the key to good government. Well, Ezra Taft Benson was in Washington during all of the New Deal, and he had to know of Frances Perkins' views. And yet, when he came into the USDA, he became the top dog in 1953. And one of the first things that he did was to push legislation through Congress that made the federal land bank system an independent agency, just exactly the opposite from what Perkins had recommended and taught. He gave the land bank system a way of working outside the traditional channels of government. No audits would be run on its records. No inquiries would be made. That's the same formula that runs the Federal Reserve System. It's an eleemosynary trust. There are no audits being done on the Federal Reserve. There are no audits being done on the federal land banks. Benson's mind was totally closed on the subject, and a closed mind is the worst thing that you can turn loose inside of government. A closed mind can do far more damage than any terrorist. And as long as Benson was in office, however, nothing much went wrong. The same holds true for the Kennedy and Johnson years. But the chickens came home to roost when Richard Nixon took office, and federal dominance of farm credit is one of the most enduring and questionable legacies of the Nixon administration. Until 1916, long-term farm credit was totally a capitalistic system, and it was not working well. The land bank and mixed long-term credit systems devised under Woodrow Wilson served the farmers and the nation fairly well. Under Franklin Roosevelt and Harry Truman, small impoverished farmers and tenant farmers were brought into the system. Then the Nixon administration, without consulting with anyone, allowed this independent agency to engage in a crude form of socialism, and the system failed in every way. Any system that is socialized along Stalinist lines becomes cumbersome, burdensome, and irrational. It loses touch with the people that it serves and has no feeling for them. It manifests concern only for itself and its economic privileges. Socialism turns bureaucratic snotty and domineering. Bureaucrats, by definition, have a vested interest in protecting the failed policies of the past, and they won't admit to making any errors. And if left unchecked, they're always ready to spend more money. Once entrenched, they will not surrender their economic privileges or power without a protracted struggle. Now, the system, as it now stands, forces farmers into a corner, and that's the reason that so many of them have committed suicide in the past decade. The system should make a farmer anxious to pay, but instead, the system crushes the farmer. Now, here's how that racket works. After the sale that we described above, The loan officer goes back to his office and he pulls files on loan requests. Now, he noticed that old Jed talked to him several weeks ago about buying some more land, but both agreed then that he had no equity in his land and thus could not qualify for another loan. Now, the loan officer gave him a call. "Jed," he says, "there was a sale yesterday at Miss Mandy's place, and guess what? That farm sold for $100,000. Then he notices that old Jed over here has better soil than Miss Mandy's, and so he adds $10,000 to the appraised price of Jed's farm. Now, notice how the appraised value has jumped from $50,000 to $110,000 in just one day. No one did a thing to justify such an increase. The farmer certainly didn't do anything to earn this increased appraisal. The profitability of wheat hasn't gone up in one day, and the land's value floated ever upward on a cushion of hot air from the loan officer's mouth. The new appraisal was based on a false sales price, not on any intrinsic worth." Well, now, boys and girls, that's precisely what's happened in the current housing crisis or the housing meltdown. Now, let me bring to your attention one more time. Listen to this story again. As we're talking about land values now being raised artificially, and about how the number of farmers has decreased on the land. Remember, the number of farmers has gone down from about 45 million in 1920 to about 1,900,000 today. Well, listen to this story again. Protocol number 6. It says here, and keep in mind this is done now back in 1884. Now, let's extrapolate what we know so far into this protocol, and then let's move this forward, and let's say, well, now, can we see who's doing what to who and how this works? "We shall soon begin to establish huge monopolies, colossal reservoirs of wealth." Does that remind you of J.P. Morgan and Goldman Sachs? "Upon which even the big Gentile properties will be dependent to such an extent that they will all fall together with the government credit on the day following the political catastrophe." Does that remind you of General Motors, Chrysler, Enron? The economists here present must carefully weigh the significance of this combination, and we must develop by every means the importance of our supergovernment. Does that remind you of the United Nations? Representing that supergovernment as the protector and benefactor of all who voluntarily submit to us. The aristocracy of the Gentiles as a political force has passed away, and we need not take them into consideration. But as owners of the land, they are harmful to us in that they are independent in their sources of livelihood. Therefore, at all costs, we must deprive them of their land. Is that what we see going on here in America today? Are we being deprived of our land? Are we being evicted from our homes and our farms? Now, the best way, the best means to attain this is to increase the taxes and the mortgage indebtedness. Have they increased the taxes on our properties? And have they increased our mortgage indebtedness? These measures will keep land ownership in a state of unconditional subordination. Total chaos. Is that what we see today? Total chaos? Unable to satisfy their needs by small inheritances, the aristocrats among the Gentiles will burn themselves out rapidly. Do you see us going broke? Do you see us in lines? Do you see us with our hands in our with our hats in our hands going to the banks asking them to help us with our mortgages, give us extensions? Huh? Is that what we're witnessing today? Now, at the same time, it's necessary to encourage trade and industry vigorously, and especially speculation. Hey, did you know that half the people of America are involved in stocks, bonds, mortgages, commercial paper, speculation? Now, the function of this speculation, of which is to act as a counterpoise to industry. Without speculation, industry will cause private capital to increase and tend to improve the condition of agriculture by freeing the land from indebtedness for loans by the land banks. Well, have you noticed that we're all buried in debt and speculation in the markets? And isn't that what we're constantly encouraged to do? It is necessary for industry to deplete the land of both laborers and capital. Well, haven't they depleted the land of laborers? I mean, we've moved all of the people, 44 million in 1920, to the cities, working for General Motors and Chrysler and Ford, haven't we? And through speculation, transfer all of the money of the world into our hands. Well, doesn't Goldman Sachs, J.P. Morgan, Citigroup have all the money in the world? Thereby throwing the Gentiles into the ranks of the proletariat, and then the Gentiles will bow before us to obtain the right to existence. Boys and girls, it doesn't make any difference who wrote that. That's already been done, past tense. We're not talking about what we're going to prevent, what we're going to vote out. That's already here, and there isn't any of us that's going to change anything written there in the Sixth Protocol. Now, we might step off the tracks and let the train go by without getting run over, but you're not going to stop that train from coming through. That's a done deal. Now, going on, he says, under the Farm Credit Act, the bank can now loan 85% of its appraisal on this land. Now that Jed's farm is worth $110,000. Now Jed's got a $50,000 farm. Because of this sale yesterday of $100,000, Jed's farm is worth $100,000. And now the loan officer says, I'll go up another $10,000. That's $110,000. Overnight, this is what happens. Here on HH, we had some land over here that we thought was worth $5,000 an acre. And the reason we thought it was worth $5,000 an acre is because the real estate man came out and appraised it based upon all the other land that was in the neighborhood here. These building lots, you know, sell for about $5,000 an acre. And then one day, word came down that somebody bought 3 acres down by Bruno's for $10,000 an acre. Guess what happened to all the land on HH? You got it. All of the land on HH suddenly went from $5,000 to $10,000 an acre based upon one sale of 3 acres down by Bruno's. That's exactly what happened in the Eel River Valley. Lindy LaFranchi in 1960 was the first farmer to break the $1,000 an acre barrier. It was 160 acres up near Lolita, and Lindy LaFranchi went over and paid $1,000 an acre. The highest price ever paid up to that moment in time was $850 an acre. Lindy LaFranchi agreed to pay $1,000 an acre for 160 acres. And guess what happened? You couldn't buy an acre of land in Eel River Valley for under $1,000 an acre the day after Lindy signed the deal. Now that's exactly what they're doing here on lands and houses. They're artificially boosting these prices, not based upon the productivity of the land, not based upon how many bushels of wheat per acre you're getting. They simply go out here and boost the price of it by lending the money. But in order to support that price, they have to boost the price of the commodity. Congress comes into the scene, they boost the price of the commodity to $12 a bushel to support this $110,000 here. And then when they suck all these farmers in, they just take the price supports off of the commodity and let it drop to its market price of $5. And what happens to the farmers? They're all dead on arrival. Now this means that a loan of $93,000 is possible, and Jed can now buy another farm if he so desires. Sure enough, several weeks later, there's another farm sale down the road. Jeb bids the price up to $125,000 with the same loan officer standing right by his side whooping him on. Jed pays nothing down, takes out a mortgage on his home place and the new land. A few weeks later, he buys two more farms for $150,000 each. Now he has four farms, each with an appraised value of $150,000 for a total of $600,000. He owes the Federal Land Bank $425,000 with interest on the loan at 8%. Jed will owe $41,920 in interest the very first year. But this isn't the end of it. Old Jed's agony has just begun. When the Federal Land Bank system became insolvent in 1984 and turned to Congress for financing, the Federal Land Bank Association increased old Jed's interest rate from 8% to 13.75%. Now old Jed owed $58,437 per year in interest rather than $41,920. Meanwhile, the price of wheat collapsed. Gee, I wonder why. That left old Jed with less money than ever to meet his increased interest costs. Under circumstances like these, it's a small wonder that so many farmers fell into chronic depression or turned a gun on themselves. Suicide, by the way, is now the most prevalent cause of death among wheat farmers. Now, what old Jeb didn't understand was joint and several liability. He didn't understand interest. He couldn't count. He went to the public school. He was educated. He was dumbed down. He was encouraged by his friend Jim at the Land Bank Association to go ahead and buy this land. After all, prices are high. This is what happened to you people with your houses. As the prices were going up, you went out and bought more and more houses. There were people just buying houses and buying condominiums just to be buying them because they could buy one this year, and then they could sell it next year and take the appreciation. Yeah, you know. And, of course, the guys that did that were making money. There's always people that make money. But there's ultimately an end to the process. And now we've reached the end of that process. Now, the crazy part of it is that it's being blamed on happenstance, circumstances beyond our control. When I watch the news, you know, the newscasters, they say, oh, my God, it's terrible, and we just don't understand it. They stutter and stammer around. But then bottom line is they probably don't understand the numbers here either. And if it wasn't for this guy North to lay out these numbers based upon his experience as a CPA preparing the tax returns for these people and having been from the Midwest himself, we would not have this piece to the puzzle. This is an exciting piece to the puzzle. And in all the years that I've been reporting, this is one of the bigger, better pieces. For years, I knew something was wrong. I could see that it wasn't working. And I was convinced that it was staged, but I couldn't prove it. Not until I got the book, which is called Night Came to the Farms of the Great Plains. Now I can prove there's a conspiracy. Now I've got the actors. I've got the names, dates, times, places, facts, witnesses, and evidence. Hell, I think I could take this into court. I think I could apply the rules of evidence in the Kwok-Ting test and prove this. Well, let me give you a reminder here that you're listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the law school and the Law Hour, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. And the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives, and all of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order one by calling the law school and asking for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. Click onto the archives page, and you can download it right there, georgegordon.org. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. And we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements, these recommendations that we give, that doesn't mean that the authors or the publications that we're endorsing are necessarily going to reciprocate by endorsing and recommending us. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review either. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine or mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Hey, I'm going to tell you a little story here. Let me first of all remind you that to subscribe to Acres USA, 1 year, 12 issues is $27, 37 international. So if you're outside the United States, send them a $37 bill. And if you're inside the United States, send them a $27 bill. 2 years, 24 issues, $48, 68 international. Three years, 36 issues, $66, or $95 if you're living in Canada, Australia, or someplace else. It's a U.S. publication. Now, I get a paper that comes from Bill Buckler down in Queensland, Australia. Don't be afraid to subscribe to these international publications. The people outside the United States know more about what's going on inside the United States than we do. That's why the international forecaster is so good. It's because Bob Chapman has contacts all over the world. And then as a result of that, John Coleman, for instance, the MI6 man from Carson City, Nevada, he has contacts all over the world. And that's why his newsletter is so good. And that's why his view of the United States is so good. Now, if you're outside the United States, don't be afraid to subscribe to a paper inside the United States. There's nothing else like this that I know of anywhere in the world, like Acres USA. So if you're outside the United States and you're not subscribing to a farm publication, these guys will tell you where the bodies are buried. These guys will tell you where to get organic food and how to raise it and how to grow it. And they've got a section in here on books. They've got a book corner. And they sell books. There isn't anything about organic farming that you can't learn from Acres USA. If it has been discovered, they already know about it, and they've got it in books, and they're ready to share it with you. So the telephone number at Acres USA is 1-800-355-5313. Once again, that's 1-800-355-5313. And let me tell you a little story here. Gather around, boys and girls, it's story time. I one time was running a company called Atlantis Manufacturing Company, and we designed and built waterbeds and waterbed frames, case goods and things like that, case goods, dressers, armoires, hutches, nightside table. And when I started the company, we had a very, very small, I think we had, well, we started off with just one design called the Sun Valley. And then as time went on, I had a catalog, and within 3 or 4 years, I had a catalog with probably 75 products in it. So I developed a marketing plan and a marketing strategy over here that was second to none. I mean, I was out selling Ethan Allen, Pennsylvania House. I mean, anybody that I went to, I was the only waterbed company selling to furniture stores. And as time went on, we were very successful. We're doing our thing over here. And the biggest furniture company in Utah is called R.C. Willie. And when you are selling to R.C. Willie, you've arrived. And, of course, I wasn't selling to Levitt's and I wasn't selling to R.C. Willie. I was selling to a lot of furniture stores, you know, but not to the biggies. So I wanted to break into the big time, you know, just like everybody else does, you know. You want to make your mark in the world. And so I pulled into Willie's one time. They were up in Ogden, Utah. Actually, not in Ogden, but, you know, between Ogden and Salt Lake. And so I pulled in there one time, big furniture showroom. I mean, it is humongous. And I went in and talked to him, and I couldn't even get in to talk to a buyer. And so I left, and I was kind of disappointed, you know. And so as time went on, one day, on a lark, sitting in my office one day, and so I took one of our catalogs, And I put it into an envelope and put a cover letter in there, you know, and I said, hey, I'd like to come down and talk to you about our product line. And I got a letter from RC Willie back, and they said, yeah, come on down, we'll talk to you. So I called them, made an appointment, and the next time I took a load down to Western Sales, and I pulled into Willie's, and now I've got a truckload. So, in fact, I got a truck and trailer load. And I invited the buyer to come out and look. I opened the door, and I said, we ship blanket wrapped. And I told him my sales program, and he was really impressed. And then he said, you know, I think we can do business. And so I went inside, and we chit-chatted a little bit. Now, they looked at our catalog, and they listened to our program, and we sat down, and he said, yeah, we want to buy from you. And he told me, he said, now, we buy in carload lots. Now, a truck and trailer is a half a carload. A carload is a railroad boxcar, and a semi-load is one half that. And Willie buys in carload lots. Now, that means that they're going to take two semi-loads at a time. And he told me that they pay 90-day dating. Now, 90-day dating means is that I deliver the load today to you on July 1st, and you're going to pay me on October the 1st. You're not going to pay me in July, August, and September. Now, that means I've got to go to my bank, and if RC Willie was to order a carload in July, August, and September, I'd have six semi-loads. Now, to show you what this boils down to, our company could turn out one semi-load a week. And Willie is going to buy one carload a month, and so that's six. They're going to take one half of our total production. Now, that means that for the rest of our customers, we wouldn't be able to deliver. So in order to meet that kind of a production schedule, I have to go to the bank, borrow money, and then furthermore, Willie isn't going to pay me, so I've got to finance this for 90 days. Got that? So Willie is going to be buying the carload, selling it, and they're pretty big and pretty fast. They would buy a carload in July. By the end of the month, I'd have it sold. And then they're going to take another carload in August, and they're going to sell that one during the month of August. And then they're going to buy a third carload in September, and then they're going to sell that one. I'm not going to get paid a dime. Willie is going to sell this, make double their money for July, August, and September as an illustration. And I got to finance all this because I want to get in and sell to this company. Now, on my way down to Western Sales, I was thinking about how fortunate I was that I'm going to get into the RC Willie pocket, and so I went down, unloaded, and I went up to my old buddy Colin's office, and we're sitting there chit-chatting a little bit, and I told him about the Willie deal. And he said, well, God, I'm sorry to hear that. And I looked at him, you know, and I said, well, what do you mean you're sorry to hear that? I mean, this is the biggest furniture store in Utah. This is the big time. And he said, yeah, that's why I'm sorry to hear that. He said, I'm glad you told me. He says, now I got to find another supplier. And I said, well, why do you need to find another supplier? I'll supply you just like I've always done. He says, oh, no. He says, you're going bankrupt. And I said, bankrupt? I'm about to sign a deal that's gonna raise my production by 50%, and you're telling me I'm going bankrupt? He said, yeah, you're history, you're toast, you're out of the game. In less than a year, Atlantis Manufacturing Company will be a footnote to history. And then I said, you're serious, aren't you? He said, you know, like a heart attack, I'm serious. He said, that's the worst news I've ever heard, and it ought to be the worst news that you ever heard. 90-day dating? They're going to finance their operation on your money? And I said, well, okay, explain this to me. He says, okay, here's the way this goes. This is called a hostile takeover. You're about to sign up for a hostile takeover. You're a corporation. And RC Willie is going to come in here, and they're offering to buy this from you. Did you notice that the buyer never said a word about discounts? He's just going to pay you full bore retail or full bore wholesale, and he's going to sell it for retail. I said, yeah, you're right. They didn't ask for a discount. I said, that's right. So you're selling frames for $50 a frame, and you're making $25. Now, with me, when you come in here, I pay you cash in advance, and you're working on my money. Willie didn't ask you for a discount, but they're going to be working on your money, and you've got to go borrow that and pay interest on it. And furthermore, they're going to buy and sell three carloads. That's six semi-loads before you ever see a penny. I said, yeah, that's the way they work, all right. And he said, then they're going to come to you and say, hey, this is such a good program, we're going to take two carloads a month. And you'll have to go to the bank to borrow money. You'll have to put on a swing shift. You might even have to run your little plant 24 hours a day with three shifts. You're going to leverage yourself out borrowing money from the bank so that you can service RC Willie until you get to a point where you have to have the Willie account in order to make your bank payments. Then, at the end of the year, they'll come to you and say, by the way, you know, we've been paying you $50 for these frames, but we have another supplier over here that will pay that will supply frames for $35 or $40 a frame. And so we're not going to pay you $50 a frame anymore, or we're not going to buy our frames from you. We're just going to buy your headboards, and we'll buy the frames here from Pennsylvania House or somebody else, or Pacific Frames or somebody. And then you can't let Pacific Frames take over that volume of business, so you'll have to cut your price. And then they'll do that with your headboards and case goods and everything else until you're working on a 5% margin. And you'll have to, just to make your payments, Now when they have, when they've chiseled you down to where you can't go anywhere else, they'll come to you and they'll say, now, we're going to buy 75% of your company. We'll let you keep 25% of the stock and we'll let you run the company for us. And if you refuse, they'll drop you like a hot potato. You'll go bankrupt. They'll come into the sale and buy it out and put another manager in. And it'll be the R.C. Willie Furniture Company with a division, the waterbed frame division. And then they'll supply their own with their own wholesale company. Now, boys and girls, that's exactly what Walmart did to Rubbermaid. Rubbermaid, that's a subsidiary of Walmart. And that's called a hostile takeover. That's what Wall Street did to the Pacific Lumber Company in Scotia, California. Once I saw that, and I understood that from my old friend Colin, he said, sorry to hear that. And I said, well, now you don't need to be sorry because now I'm not going to take the deal. I went back to Willie and I said, happy to deal with you, but you got to pay me COD like all the rest of my customers. And Willie said, we don't pay anybody COD. So I said, well, I'm not going to finance R.C. Willie. I'm going to finance George Gordon. And I walked out the door. Now, that was one of the best business decisions I ever made. But if I hadn't been warned in advance, I would have taken on the R.C. Willie account and I would have become a footnote to history, just like the farmers have become a footnote to history here. This process, by the way, this is called the hostile takeover. It's been going on for thousands of years. I just never heard of it until another businessman sat me down and said, let me explain the hostile takeover to you. The people at Rubbermaid evidently had not heard that story because when Walmart said, hey, you got a hell of a product there, let's buy from you, they got Rubbermaid sucked in. And they did a hostile takeover, and then they moved the Rubbermaid company to China. Hey, they're still selling Rubbermaid under different brand names. In fact, I think they're still using the Rubbermaid trademark in Walmart. But all you have to do is take over the machinery, the equipment, and the accounts, and you're off and running. And you didn't have to pay anything for it, and you didn't have to start up, you know, with the startup costs and work and sweat to build your business. Like you farmers, you know, you start off, you're a young man, you inherit dad's farm. And then, because of your vanity, jealousy, lust, greed, and fear, these guys come in here and they play on those, what we call the motivators of human nature. And then as a result of that, you fall victim to it. See? Now there's a protocol that calls for that over here. Let me see if I can read that one to you. Now, let's see if I can find that. To each act of opposition. No, that's not it. Yeah, here we go. It says, we must so direct the education of Gentile society that its hands will drop in the weakness of discouragement in the face of any undertaking where initiative is needed. And we'll so wear out and exhaust the Gentiles by all of this that they'll be compelled to offer us an international authority, which by its position will enable us to absorb without disturbance all the governmental forces of the world and thus form a super government. It's called a hostile takeover. It's the way that works. Yeah. See, there was one more in here. We will force up wages. We will force up prices of soybeans, which, however, will be of no benefit to the workers or the farmers. For at the same time, we will cause a rise in the price of prime necessities, pretending that this is due to a decline of agriculture and of cattle raising. And we'll also artfully and deeply undermine the sources of production by instilling in the workmen ideas of anarchy, that's labor unions, and encourage them in the use of alcohol. Today they've got drugs. And at the same time, taking measures to drive all of the intellectual forces of the Gentiles from the land. You get a whistleblower in a position, and they'll drive him out. Now, our triumph has been rendered easier by the fact that in our relations with the men whom we've wanted, we have always worked upon the most sensitive chords of the human mind, upon the cash account, upon the cupidity, upon the insatiability for material needs of man. And each one of these human weaknesses taken alone is sufficient to paralyze initiative, because it hands over the will of men to the disposition of him who has bought their activities. That's what R.C. Willie wanted to do. They wanted to buy my activities. And they would have succeeded. And that's what they've done to the wheat farmers. That's what they've done to the cattle raisers and everybody else. They have bought your activities. They appeal to your vanity, jealousy, lust, greed, and fear. Then when you succumb, then they shut the gate behind you and they got you trapped. So if you're in debt right now, I don't care who you are, you got a home, you got a farm, you're in debt. If you can't get out of debt before the final curtain rings down, it's what they call the political catastrophe. I suspect that it's the bankruptcy of the United States. I think that's the final political catastrophe is the bankruptcy. It's what we went through in 1933, except we faced it with a devaluation. See, every state in the Union is facing bankruptcy. The counties and the cities. You see, we've gotten all of our cities, all of our counties, all of our states buried in debt. And we can't even pay the retirement benefits of our public employees. Those are all underfunded. There might be a couple of them that are funded correctly, but for the most part, they are. The United States federal government's bankrupt. California's bankrupt. Illinois is bankrupt. And the rest of the states are bankrupt also. They're just not in as poor a condition as Illinois and California. In the final analysis, there's a political catastrophe that hasn't been triggered yet, but it's coming. And I don't know if it's next week, next month, next year, or 5 years from now, but one of these days they're going to trigger that. And when they do, whether it's caused by World War III or it's caused by some black flag terrorist event, I can't tell you. I'm not a prophet, but you can bank on this. These guys have never been wrong from 1884 to last night at 5 o'clock. And every move that they've made between 1884 and last night at 5 o'clock has worked and worked like clockwork. They've never missed yet. And if you want me to tell you how to bet, I would bet on the protocols. They've never been wrong yet, and I don't think they're going to be wrong in the future. Well, I'm running a little short of time here. Let me give you another reminder and another sales pitch here. This is Acres USA, 1-800-355-5313. We'll pick this up here right next time. Over these insurance companies have never made the mistake of recklessly inflating the value of land. It's the land banks that have, and our Congress and our president that's inflated our houses, inflated our commercial industries and commercial businesses, and our farmland. See, we have another collapse coming in the form of commercial real estate. That's buildings like the Empire State Building. See, those buildings are all mortgaged also. What you want is 1-800-355-5313. That's Acres USA. And you're looking for the book, Night Came to the Farms of the Great Plains, written by a CPA, Raymond D. North, who exposes, like nobody I've ever seen before, this whole thing of Reaganomics and the farm program, the Federal Land Bank, the FMHA, and the Federal Reserve. Now, the Federal Reserve we pretty much know about, but it's this Federal Land Bank. That's the real gem in this book. All right, with that, I've got to leave it right there and remind you that you have been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals but by prearrangement. Now, the Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has our radio log schedule and archives. All of it can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, time's up. I got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.